Been looking forward to being with you this week. My throat started getting a little bit weak a few days ago, so do the best that we can this morning. Just bear with me. But I've only visited you a handful of times, but it has felt a little bit of a homecoming of sorts, just personally, having went to school in the area, and of course the Sweets being family, and knowing the Monts and just knowing this area. So I maybe have looked forward to this more than you. I'm mostly a stranger to most of you, but I appreciate the invitation and want to let you know I'll be available during the day as well if there's any way that I can help here. Just like know Steve has a good reputation for working, and I'm here to do the same while I can. So thank you for inviting me, and let me know in any way that I can help. As was mentioned in the prayer, my son Joel is 4 years old. He came with me. He's just spending a couple days with my parents in Louisville. So he'll, Lord willing, be here Tuesday night. We live in a society, obviously, of change. And so that's normal to us, because that's just the way that it's been. But a lot of societies are not necessarily that way. In many places in the past, and even in the present, the way things are is the way things have typically been. On the overhead here, I have one example, and I'll give you a few examples that show how quickly not only things in our society change, I don't just mean technology-wise, but in the sense of how quickly our society is changing its ideas about what is right and what is wrong. Before I get to this one, let me give you this example. When your grandparents were your age, most likely they didn't know anybody, and there was nobody in their neighborhood who had been divorced. There may have been, but it would be an exception. Even if they biblically had a right to, they probably hadn't been. And they probably didn't know anybody who had been. When your grandparents were your age, that wasn't that long ago. This chart is a survey about people's ideas about homosexuality and so-called homosexual marriage. That's a contradiction of terms, like jumbo shrimp. But nevertheless, you can see the green line is the percentage of people beginning in 1996 who believe that homosexual marriage should be valid. And back then, only 27% of people thought it should. And then here we are just about 20 years later, and that number is over 50%. And then the yellow line, the number of people who believed it should not be valid, was almost 70%. And now, just 20 years later, it's barely hanging above the 40% line. So that doesn't prove anything's right or wrong. All it proves is human ideas about what is right or wrong changes. Let me give you another couple of examples. When my grandmother was in grade school, she's 94 years old, the principal was the principal over grades 1 through 11. And she told me that when he heard that a student was going to a dance hall, the principal would go and talk to the student about it. Not to escort them there, but to warn them about the dangers of it. Today, the schoolhouse is the dance hall. Today, with parents' approval, teenagers are inviting their boyfriend and girlfriend over to sleep together, and the parents are providing the bedroom and encouraging them to do it. I read about that just in a national magazine. So hopefully these are a few eye-opening things to you. I hope you're surprised at some of that. Some of that I know you're familiar with. So that just illustrates how quickly things change in our society, and things that to some people today are normal, not that long ago, those were not only not normal, they were viewed as being wrong. But those ideas quickly change. So we cannot use what is normal and accepted and common today as any kind of a measurement about what in God's eyes is right or wrong. The same is true. The words we're going to kind of focus in on this morning are the words lasciviousness or lewdness or uncleanness. Now, those are words that as your children go to school, they don't hear that in the classroom. They don't hear that on the playground, those words. They don't hear that in the music on the radio or the television shows. Maybe the closest word to that and I even going to half blush to say it, but the word sexy, that might relate to be kind of a more common word, but that word is practically never used in a negative sense, the way that lasciviousness, lewdness, or uncleanness is. And so that's what we're going to be talking, studying about this morning. I want to look at several verses that have at least one of these two words, lewdness, lasciviousness, depending on the translation you use. Some might even say sensuality and uncleanness. And what I want you to notice in these verses is the company that the Holy Spirit put alongside lewdness, sensuality, and uncleanness. 2 Corinthians 12:21. I shall mourn for many who have sinned before and have not repented of the uncleanness and lewdness and what's right there in the middle, fornication, which they have practiced. So notice the friends, notice the cousins, so to speak, of lewdness and uncleanness. Galatians 5:19, the works of the flesh, adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness. And you could go on and read other things. Ephesians 5:3, fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be named among you. Colossians 3:5-7, therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry, and the wrath of God comes upon those who participate in such. Titus 2:3-7, if you cutouts from that. And here's really giving the other side of lewdness and uncleanness. The older women likewise, that they be teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to be discreet, chaste, that means pure, good, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. And then the young men were to be encouraged in similar ideals and principles and conduct. Titus 2:11-12, the grace of God. We hear a lot about the grace of God from some people today. And don't ever forget that the grace of God teaches us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in the present age. Even though uncleanness and lewdness, the words aren't there, the ideas are, aren't they? 1 Peter 2:11, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain. We'll see that word again in just a minute. Abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul. 1 Peter 4:3-4. We have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lusts, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation. Notice that. They think what they do is normal. And they think you're the weird one because you're so different. You're not doing what everybody else is doing. And they'll speak evil of you because of it. 1 John 3:4, whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness. And sin is lawlessness. Little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous, just as he is righteous. So this not only tells us what God thinks about lasciviousness and uncleanness, this tells you the company, the crowd, the family of those kinds of activities. And then last one here, 1 Thessalonians 5:21-22, test all things, hold fast what is good, abstain from every form of evil. Verse 21 that tells us to test. That means to think about, to analyze, to scrutinize, to examine it carefully, think about everything, and hold fast, hold tightly to the things that are good, and then abstain from, think about that word. If you have to abstain from it, how close, how much of it can you do? Well, if it's abstained, you can't do it just a little bit. You can't do it to any degree. Abstain from every form of evil. Now, some translations, versions translate that from every appearance of evil. And sometimes that's been used to say, well, if something might just, if it might not be wrong, it might just appear to be wrong, so we shouldn't do it. Well, there might be some verses that would relate to that, but that's not what this is saying. This is saying abstain from every appearance, every form, every kind of evil. Everything that is evil, you completely abstain from it. And so today, any kind or form of lasciviousness or lewdness or sensuality, every kind or form of uncleanness, what this tells us is we have to abstain from it. It can have no part in our life as parents during the time period that you have authority over your children. Yes, you want to let them make some of their own decisions or learn how to make those decisions, but in the end, you have to make the decisions that they will not participate, as far as your word goes and your authority goes, in anything that God would classify as unclean or lewd or sensual. Now open your Bibles to Genesis 39. What we'll spend the majority of our time this morning doing, just looking at some examples of these, some real life, flesh and blood, real people, real places. And even though they lived long ago, I want you to see some of the ways that lasciviousness and lewdness and uncleanness, some of the ways that it's been practiced. These are ideas. They have to take a form in some way. So what do they look like? Well, in Genesis chapter 39, you remember Joseph, maybe? And you remember Potiphar's wife, and so she made her intentions clear in verse 7. And she persisted in verse 10 to the point that Joseph just decided, I'm just not going to be in the same house with her. That didn't mean it was going to be a sin if he was with her. He just decided that that's just the best, that's the wisest course. And as we find out, he was right. Read with me verses 11 and 12. Just to save my voice, Steve, would you read these and I'll have you read some of the other verses.
But it happened about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside. Yet she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside.
So first she tried the words, and she persisted, and that didn't work. When her words alone didn't work, what did she do? She grabbed him. I want you to think about that for just a minute. Maybe at first she just kind of grabbed the shirt or his shoulder. But if he had stayed around, what would she have done once she had a hold of him? And if he had not left, she would have pulled him closer. She would have pulled him closer. She would have pulled him closer. She would have tried to use the sensation of touch to persuade him. Maybe that's what she did here, is pulled him to her body. I don't know. But even if all she had done is grab him to hold him, if he had stayed, she would have pulled him to her. Imagine if Joseph had not done what he had done. If he had stayed there listening to her words and then let her pull him in and hold him close to her, what would be the effect of the words and the touch? We all understand. If Joseph didn't already have his mind made up, then we know where he would have lied with her. So the power of touch and of words is a part of the lasciviousness, or is how lasciviousness and uncleanness is practiced. Next, let's go to Exodus chapter 32. And Steve, if you'll read verse 6. Here Moses is up on the mountain receiving the law of the Lord. And Aaron helps the people, you remember, to mold a golden calf. And leads them in that. Exodus 32, verse 6.
Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play.
Okay, so where did they get the idea of a golden calf?
From Egypt,
that's right. Where did they get the idea of what to do when you're going to have a feast to the golden calf? Where did they get the idea to eat and drink and arise up to play? From Egypt, that's right. Let me give you an example of something else that went along with ancient Egyptian religious processions or feasts or festivals. According to this historian, at religious processions, women danced around the sacred barge naked or dressed in cloaks open in front to the accompaniment of music in order to chase away the demons by their complete or partial nudity. The participation at such processions was vigorously observed, and lists of participating servants have been preserved. Now here's an artist's depiction of something like that happening, and I have intentionally blurred that image to try to have some sense of decency while also helping you to see this would be a public procession. At the back you can see maybe here would be the barge, probably the idol or something related to that. And so you'd have the priest, but then they would have these women, some completely or partially topless, or as this was saying, their garments open in the front, and they thought that would scare away the demons. But you see a part of the appeal of that. And the dancing is what is going along with that. Dancing and partial nudity. Now, that was a part of the religious aspect of Egyptian worship. Now, back to Exodus 32. And in verse 19.
So it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and cast the tablets out of his hands, and broke them at the foot of the mountain.
Okay. So we know they were eating and drinking, just like they did in Egypt. And they rose up to play. That would be sexual immorality. Just like they did in Egypt. Well, what also was a part of that? Dancing was. Now, Egyptians might have had a little happy dance. They might have had something like that. But when there's dancing along with eating and drinking and playing, sexual type playing, then there's no question this is lascivious dancing. This is lewd dancing. This is unclean dancing. Along with partial and or complete nudity. And then last, verse 25.
Now when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron had not restrained them, to the shame among their enemies.
Okay. So the people, the New King James says unrestrained. Does anybody have the King James Version? What does it say there?
Naked.
It says when Moses saw the people were naked. I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I don't know which it should be, but it really doesn't make a difference. One of the ways they would have been unrestrained by imitating the Egyptians would have been to have been naked. Public display of nakedness, eating and drinking and dancing led to sexual immorality. But before the fornication took place, we're not surprised. Here's one other picture. This is authentic Egyptian art or records of some kind. And so here you have some of the women clothed, but I've blurred that part out because it's just the depiction of a woman with nothing. So that's what was normal in Egypt. That wasn't weird. That was normal. Even imagine young children going out and growing up. And that, so by the time those children were teenage or grown, it wasn't weird to see a woman's breast. They had seen it all the time. They were over the weirdness if it was ever there. So that was normal in Egypt, and that was close to becoming normal in Israel until, in a variety of ways, God put a stop to that. Okay, go to 2 Samuel. Second Samuel chapter 11. This is the record of David and Bathsheba. And so we'll just read Just read verse 2.
Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold.
Okay, we're not even going to go to the sexual immorality part. We'll just stay here. What was Bathsheba's fault? Well, intentional or not, well, I think it's probably safe to say this was unintentional. But her lack of thoughtfulness and care started David down a path he didn't go out seeking. David didn't need to look at his neighbor's wife if he was interested in that. He had plenty of women of his own. So he goes out on his roof not looking for to be sexually interested in someone. But we know that's where it ended up. And part of that was Bathsheba's fault. So assuming that that wasn't her intent, assuming on her part her motives were innocent and it was an accident, she didn't realize, what was the result? The result was still the same as if she had intended it. That part was Bathsheba's fault. Now what was David's fault? Well, when he saw, he didn't look away. He kept looking and the video camera was on and he was taking mental pictures and he didn't turn away. And when he began thinking in the wrong direction, he didn't start thinking in the right direction. He didn't stop thinking. And notice, whether you're single or whether you're married, notice from this, being married doesn't mean your sexual temptations just go away because you have a wife. Husbands, you know that. Wives, you need to know that. If you're not married, you need to know that, well, I just have to marry, so then that won't be a problem. Well, David lets you know, if you don't have self-control, if you're not willing to submit yourself to the will of the Lord, then being married isn't going to make sexual temptation go away. David participated, and Bathsheba participated in lasciviousness and uncleanness, and in part, even before they maybe realized it. And then one other example, Proverbs chapter 7. Book of Proverbs is the first seven chapters are written like a father to a son. Parents, the book of Proverbs is a reminder, you need to be talking to your children about what we're about to talk about. They need to hear it from you. I don't know what they're hearing in the schools. You know what they're hearing if they're, I hope they're not, but listening to music and watching television that introduces these things. But they may have friends that slip it in and you're not aware of it or there to stop it at the time. But you need to be having the kind of conversations we're about to read about. Proverbs chapter 7 begins in verse 1, my son. In verse 10, there's a woman who met this young man with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. And then let's read a portion of this interaction between them, verses 13 through 18.
So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, color coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love.
So, before the sexual immorality that happens later, let's identify the sins that happen first. First, in verse 10, there's the attire of a harlot. What makes attire or clothing the clothing of a harlot? This woman wasn't out seeking pay. She wasn't a harlot in that sense. But what makes attire the attire that belongs to a harlot? Well, it's not the brand. It's the message the clothing sends. And sometimes that might be by the color or such, but typically the attire of a harlot is what is revealed, at least that's in our society. So what parts of the body are going to be revealed that would attract that kind of attention? Is it the shins and the elbows and the ears? That's not what is on Vogue and GQ or whatever the magazines are that revel in that. generally, you know, and I know, and we'll talk about that more in just a minute. Men know, and some women know, the way to a man's heart is, it's not through his stomach. It's through his eyes. That's the way you can get a man's attention. That's a way you can catch his attention. And then depending on what he does with his mind, it may vary. But you'll catch his attention. That's why advertisers know that, whether it's a billboard or a commercial. You can get even a godly man just to his attention to stop for a minute, and then the godly man will divert his attention. But a man's attention is caught with a good-looking plate of food, maybe. But with a improperly clothed woman, the majority of the time. So her sin started by the clothing that she wore. His sin started when he decided not to look away. But then she caught him. Where did we hear about that before? Yeah, Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Go back to chapter 3, verse 18 of Proverbs. This word, she caught him. That just means she caught his attention. Chapter 3, verse 18 is talking about wisdom and says she is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. This is the same word. Solomon is saying, take hold of wisdom. And this woman took hold of the young man. Look at chapter 4 and verse 13. It's the same word. Take firm hold of instruction and do not let go. That's what she did. Back in chapter 7, she took hold of him. She had his attention through his eyes. Now she's got physical contact to some degree. And this young man, unlike Joseph, stayed and listened and let her hold him. And I don't know where the holding and what the touching was at first, but we all know where it ended up and where it ended up before there was actual sexual immorality. If she's talking this way, why is she pulling him close to him? Because it's in the nature of humans, probably both genders. I know I'm a man. I know in the gender of a male, the physical touch is a powerful part of attraction. And some parts of the human body are more sensitive than others. She didn't just hold his hand. So she's talking. Her dress, she pulls him. Verse 13, she kisses him. This is more than just a kiss on the cheek or even a kiss of affection. Clearly something more than that. But the kissing happens as she's holding him. And then her enticing speech continues through the verses 14 through 21. And then eventually, then they're in the bed that she had prepared. But the uncleanness and the lasciviousness that preceded all of that, that's what I want you to see. So now let me just leave these verses up and the last part of our study thinking about today. The sins of lasciviousness and uncleanness are the things that precede sexual immorality. And so today, lasciviousness and uncleanness happens in the form of touch. A long time ago in Egypt, they understood that. Here in the days of Israel, they understood that. The purpose and the appeal of the majority of modern couples dancing, it's exactly the same thing. The purpose is the pleasure of the touch. Again, I didn't really even want to use a real life picture, so here's a couple of just drawings, and I've tried to blur it out at least to some degree. But what's the power of the touch here? Where his hands are? Why? Well, just to keep them together so they know. And whatever their intentions are, somebody started this, all the dances that are done, somebody started it. And so why did someone think, well, let's have the young man put his hand on the woman's hip And then even further behind that, the power of touch. And there they have some physical separation, but then, as is common in many of the modern dances, often that isn't even the case. And again, today, that's just normal. That's not shocking to the majority of people today, but there have been societies that had no interest in the scriptures, but there were societies, the ancient Greeks. As a rule in that culture, men and women danced separately, rarely together. And I'm not a historian. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But just ask yourself why. Why would they have a rule that boys would dance with boys, but not with girls, and girls with girls, but not with boys? Why that difference? I don't have to answer it. You know why. There was a man who said this about dancing. He said, dancing is the vertical expression of a horizontal desire legalized by music. So in other words, it would never be okay for two people who aren't married to be doing that unless there's music on. And then nobody thinks anything about it. George Bernard Shaw, not a preacher, not an elder. He didn't claim to be a Christian. No one thought he was a Christian. He was a poet, a writer of some kind. You can go read about who he was. But this did not come from somebody who made any kind of a claim to be a Christian. This is a spokesman for the world who understood the nature and the purpose of dancing. So the world understands this. And if we test all things, if we don't just do it because it doesn't seem that abnormal, but if we'll stop and analyze and think about common modern couples dancing, the element of touch is undeniably a part of that. Lasciviousness and uncleanness is present today as it has been in the form of showing nakedness. And what I want you to remember about Bathsheba and the woman of Proverbs chapter 7 is that probably the woman of Proverbs 7 had more clothes on than Bathsheba did. But the result was still the same. And probably Bathsheba had a different intent. The woman of Proverbs 7 had a crafty heart. She knew what she was doing. She did it on purpose. I don't have any reason to think Bathsheba had that intent or that purpose. But what David saw and what the young man saw was basically the same, and the result was the same. And what they saw is in many ways the same thing that's on display at the city pool or at the beaches or in movies commonly, that movies that are filled with nakedness of all kinds and sorts. And so, do you test such things? Do you abstain from such things? Do you teach your children? And as far as your decisions are gone, your children abstain from such things. Proverbs 4, verse 23 tells us to guard the heart with all diligence, for from it springs the issues of life. That's what we're talking about. Guarding our eyes is guarding our mind. Today, American religious processions may not be like the Egyptian ones. We're not going to have anybody come down the aisle today wearing a robe open in the front, man or woman. But our society is slowly more like them than not. Even sometimes the modern attire is becoming more and more low in front, showing more and more of the chest, or coming higher from the bottom up, a slit in the skirt or the dress, or a man doesn't button his shirt. The practices are increasingly becoming similar. And so then when you get that specific, someone says, well, but who can draw the line? Well, God can draw the line. And we won't go into the details of it, but in Exodus 28:42, God drew the line basically at the knee when he said to cover the nakedness you cover your thigh, from the waist to the thigh. That was how he said you would cover nakedness. The word femur, you know, your femur bone, that word femur is a Latin word that means thigh. Your femur bone goes from your hip to your knee. And so that, when people sometimes quibble about, well, where's the thigh really end? Well, it ends at your knee. And so that's where sometimes maybe a camp or a school in the past or the present might say, well, wear your clothes to the knee. And someone would say, you can't show me Bible for that. Well, maybe there would be another way to say it that would be more specific. But that is an accurate guideline from Scripture, because that's how you cover your thigh. And then Proverbs 5:19 talks about the breast in the context of the marriage relationship. And so God's standard is, God can draw the line and say, cover your chest. Either side or in the middle, God can draw the line. You cover from your chest to your knees, and your nakedness is covered. Whether it's formal, whether it's an informal occasion, it's a sport, it's a hobby with your friends or not with your friends. Lasciviousness and uncleanness don't always have to require a crafty heart. Sometimes it just requires an uninformed heart. And then last, I want to think about lasciviousness and uncleanness from the other side, not of personally displaying it, but from the perspective of viewing the nakedness of others. In these examples, David kept looking. The young man in Proverbs 7 kept looking. Joseph ran away. He not only stopped looking, he got out of the room where that was presented. And so, young people, when you're at your friend's house and the movies are on, you're going to be like David? You're going to be like the man of Proverbs 7? Or you're going to be like Joseph? Are you going to guard your heart from where all of your major decisions that affect your life and affect your family in the present and in the future and that affect your soul come from? When you're on the computer, will you guard your heart from which come the issues of life? Now, practically everything I've said today, our society would view this as a joke. Why doesn't our society even use the word lascivious, much less think about it in the context of how we dress and the prom and other such things? It's because they don't care where it goes, because they're happy, they're fine with where it ends. Our society has accepted sexual immorality of every form that, of course, they don't care about some kind of warning about what happens before that. And a few decades ago, a large portion of our society would agree with almost the majority, if not everything, that I've said this morning. Where did those ideas come from? Well, some of it maybe was just kind of culture, but there was a time where in American society, I don't just even mean religious people, I don't just mean Christians as the Bible defines that. There were people where the kind of dancing, the kind of clothing, the kind of touching that it's accepted today, it wasn't that long ago that was not accepted, that wasn't normal. And what I hope I've been able to help you see today is that 3,000 years ago, there were these habits, these practices, these same things that had to be tested, and some people did and some people didn't. And so, remember what God has said about lasciviousness and uncleanness and those who practice such things and those who permit or even encourage their children to permit some things. You know, based on that chart we looked at a minute ago, I don't have any reason to think our society is going to get any better on the matter of homosexuality or others. But here are 9 reasons why I have confidence that Christians can do better. And will do better. These are the passages we read a moment ago. The Christians will. Uh, test all things. That Christians will abstain from every and hold to what is good. And that Christians will abstain from every form of evil. There are desires. God has a right way to meet those desires. But this begins in the heart. And replace your desires with the desires of the God who puts His wisdom and His love for you on display every single day. And look to the life of people like Joseph, the faith of Moses, read the Psalms of David, the Proverbs of Solomon, and the Gospel of Jesus Christ, and abstain from every form of evil.